marketing, explosive growth, and revolutionary secrets that can catapult your business to new heights. You're now listening to the Underground Marketer Podcast with your host, Tudor Dumitrescu, the one podcast devoted to showing new businesses how to market themselves for high growth.
Welcome to the Underground Marketer. This is the place where we deliver the real truth about marketing and explore big ideas that can help new businesses thrive and grow into big ones. I'm your host, Tudor, and today it's my honor to welcome Edmond Abramyan. He is the founder of a six-figure wholesale and distribution business and the author of the soon-to-be-released book, Wired for Success. Welcome, Edmond.
Thank you, Tudor. Thank you so much for having me here today.
That's awesome. I mean, why don't you start by sharing a little bit about your story and how you really got started in business and as an entrepreneur with our listeners? Because the story I find very frequently has a lot of lessons for our listeners.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great place to start. So it starts, I think, from what I found to be similar to a lot of other entrepreneurs just starting out, is we want more freedom. We want more money. We want more control over our time. And that's pretty much how it started with me. I was working a job and was dissatisfied with the way things were going. I wasn't making the money I wanted to make. I wasn't having the freedom and flexibility over my time, over my schedule. And I remember distinctly one day I was sitting around talking to a buddy of mine, and I was letting him know about, you know, all these changes that have been happening. You know, I had just moved out at the time, so I was on my own and, you know, I had a lot more responsibility. And he just dropped in a line. He goes, "Hey man, why don't you start a business buying and selling these products that we all use," which were at the time hookah supplies. And at the time, I was, immediately resistant to the idea. Big changes and all that, I flushed into my mind and I was hesitant to agree with his idea. But interestingly enough, later on that night, I was laying in bed and I kind of caught myself with that resistance. And I was wondering, you know, why am I so hesitant to growth, right? Because that's what he was suggesting at the end of the day. And so I kind of just thought about it a little bit and realized that it's time to make a decision if I'm going to continue going the same way I'm going now or if I want to take a risk on myself. And that's what I ended up doing. The next morning, I drove down after work to the city office and I registered for a business and yeah, took things from there.
That's very interesting. I mean, you mentioned that you were working a job. What sort of job were you working at that point?
So at that point, I was working at a startup company as a half software developer and half manager of the office. I'm sure you're familiar when companies are just starting up, there's no real one role that the people in there take. They're kind of just doing whatever needs to be done, sort of like how an entrepreneur who's just starting out a business.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that sounds like quite valuable, the skills that you've learned there. It sounds like it's really positioned you in a way to start a business afterwards, wearing many hats and doing a lot of different roles. I mean, from the people that I usually speak with on the podcast who are entrepreneurs, I see sales roles being very frequent just before they started a business. In your case, it's really something that's sort of entrepreneurial in itself, helping a startup basically grow. Can you tell us a little bit about how that experience basically prepared you to start your business?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I would say life itself kind of prepared me for it, not just that singular job, because you mentioned sales. And before I was in this job, before I had this job, I actually had a ton of different sales positions, whether it was door-to-door sales or telemarketing or, you know, just online sales through eBay and Amazon and Craigslist and all sorts of different platforms. So I think I would have to say it's really just been a series of steps that had led me to starting my own business, not just that one singular job. Not to say that that one job didn't help a ton. You know, I learned a lot from the founders. I learned a lot from the experience itself, how, you know, companies get started and how they grow in that initial phase. Yeah, I would definitely say it's been quite a journey.
I wanted to ask you as a follow-up on that, what do you think are three key insights which, you know, if you could share with somebody in a similar position to you at that time, meaning that they worked a job, you know, they got some experience and they feel that there's a lot more out there for them, but they're not quite sure about what it will actually take for them to start a business successfully. What are three key insights that you would share with them that you think are critical for their success?
Oh, that's a great question, Tudor. I think it's actually better if I fast forward in my journey a little bit and come back around to that question, because when I started the business, I believe, looking back, I started because I wanted to make more money. And money is great, right? I mean, money is a great tool. It allows us so much conveniences and luxury and things that we wouldn't have if we didn't have money. But if I were to go back, I think I would structure things a little bit differently. And let me tell you why. After I had built my business and made the, I guess, change in my lifestyle that I was looking for, there was a lot of, how do I put it? My life just wasn't what I expected it to be, right? Things on paper looked really great. You know, I had built this successful company. I had this freedom of time. I was able to do all the things I wanted, buy most of the things I wanted to buy, take care of the people I wanted to take care of. But inside me, there was a lot of turmoil, I guess you can say. There was a lot of questions unanswered.
And I went from waking up to a loud, annoying alarm clock only to deal with corporate politics to waking up and going to sleep practically when I wanted, working with whom I wanted, how I wanted, and for the most part, when I wanted. You know, for someone like me who grew up in a family on the lower end of the socioeconomic hierarchy, it was a big deal. You know, I was living paycheck to paycheck, and now I had this incredible convenience of structuring my day how I wanted to. And the biggest shift was the freedom and time it gave me. And that's what allowed me to really examine my life and the decisions I was making and where I was headed.
It didn't feel so great. You know, I think that the best way to describe it is like existential dread, where you really are lacking a sense of meaning in your life. You accomplish a bunch of goals. And I think other entrepreneurs may be able to relate to this. You know, when they hit these big goals that they set for themselves, and then they sit around and, you know, after the goal's accomplished, that initial phase of happiness wears off. It's like, okay, what next? What do I do now? And that's kind of where I was at. It wasn't until I had a big injury that kind of brought all this stuff to the surface. I was competing at an international Brazilian jiu-jitsu tournament, and I had a bad fall, and I tore my shoulder. It was a labrum in my shoulder. And, you know, I had to go through intensive surgery and the recovery process for that and all of that. But it wasn't until one evening when I was laying in bed, I was sitting up in bed. I couldn't lay down because it was so painful to lay down, to where all this stuff really started coming to mind. Sitting in my room alone, it was dark, had the covers over me, had a pillow behind me, a pillow under my arm that had just been operated on. And I was really in angst. You know, I was wondering where my life was headed. I had this idea of me being a business owner, of me being this martial artist, and this idea of being a successful person and all of that. But, you know, when I was really looking at my life, I was just not happy. I was not happy with, you know, where I was, with the injury, with the recovery process I had to go through and all of that. And that's when things really started to register. I sat down and thought of how things got to be to where they were. And
to answer your question, the first realization I came to was that we have to be willing to take complete ownership of our lives. And I mean every aspect of it. Our health, our finances, our relationships, our business, our goals, everything. The things we think are good, the things we think are bad, it really doesn't matter what our opinion is on the matter. What matters is that there ultimately are to deal with, and we have to accept that. We have to learn to see these things that we think are happening to us as actually happening for us. In other words, they're giving us golden opportunities that, if we let it, they can really launch us into a new level. And so we just have to really be able to get into a space where we can say yes to everything that comes our way. And that's what I realized when I finally made enough money to give myself time to think. I understood that my life was mine to live, and everything was really all up to me.
And I think the first thing anyone starting out needs to realize is that, you know, you're living your life in your shoes, and no one else is going to replace that. No one else is going to come in and do the things you want to do and create the things you want to create. It's all up to you. And if you don't take ownership, it's time is just going to go by, and sooner or later, you're going to realize like you spent all this time and effort on things that didn't really matter to you. So that's the first thing I would suggest to anyone in that beginning position, is to really take ownership what you want and where your life is, and really sit down and decide what it is that you want out of life. Not just the monetary aspects, but how you want your day-to-day life to look like. What type of environment do you want to be in? What type of emotions do you want to be experiencing throughout the day? For the most part, I mean, we can't obviously control all of the emotions that we experience and all of that, but we can more or less dictate where our life goes. And from that, we can dictate what we're going to experience. So the first thing I would say is take ownership of your life and really decide that you're going to commit to your goals, commit to the lifestyle that you want to create. The second realization I came to that night was the fact that we have to be willing to adapt. You know, I think a lot of times we can, you know, we get these ideas and we think that those ideas are the lo and behold, the truth, you know, right? This idea is what it is. And, you know, whatever that idea may be, whether it's an idea of who you are or where you want to go or what you want to do, it's really just that. It's an idea in our minds. It's in our imagination. And that's all it really is. So we have to be willing to accept that. And we have to be willing to adapt to circumstances, adapt to situations, whatever life brings us. We have to be flexible. That's really the second thing. And the last thing I would say is to realize that our perspectives on life are really what governs our behavior. You know, the beliefs that we hold influence our everyday actions and our communication and all of that. So if I were to go back and look at that phase in my life, the three things I would come back to is number one, take ownership. Number two, be adaptable. And number three, really examine yourself. Examine your beliefs, examine the meanings that you assign to certain life situations, and examine really who, in essence, you believe yourself to be.
There's a ton of valuable stuff here. So, I mean, thank you for sharing all of this. And your journey is really inspiring, really. I mean, it sounds like you've built your business and then you discovered that you weren't really happy with how things were, and you reevaluated things and made them better, basically, and basically changed not only your business, but also who you are. So, I mean, that's quite inspiring for a lot of people out there, for sure. Would you say that if you had the chance to go back in time and do it again, that you would approach things differently?
I think about quite often, Tudor. You know, I think there's a part of me that would want to change certain things, but really, when I take a step back and think about it all, if I were to go back and change even the slightest thing, I would not be where I am today. I would not be the person I am today. So I think I would have to say that I really wouldn't change anything.
Which means that you are basically happy with how you are today, correct?
Yeah, you can say that.
That's awesome. All right, then. So, I mean, you mentioned the three things, right? Take ownership, be willing to adapt, and be willing to change your perspective when necessary. A lot of people, I will start with the first one. A lot of people and a lot of entrepreneurs, when it comes to ownership and responsibility, a lot of them struggle because of the ideas they have about fairness. You know, for example, they would think that what's happening to them is not fair. And this not fair is a way of them telling themselves really that it's not their responsibility and it can't be their responsibility. So how can somebody go about letting go of that idea of fair or not fair so that they can move beyond that and just assume responsibility and try to make the thing as good as it can be?
Right. Oh, that's a really powerful one that I know hits home for a lot of entrepreneurs. Failure, I would really have to say, is just a part of the journey. And the sooner that a person can accept that, the easier it's going to be to deal with things. It really comes down to what we believe is failure ultimately. In my perspective, I don't think I'm failing until I give up, right? You know, if I'm constantly trying at something, if I have a goal in mind and I'm pursuing that goal, I'm telling myself I'm committed to this one outcome or one accomplishment, whatever it may be. I don't think it's a failure until you really give up on that, right? Let's say I'm trying to make a sales. I have a sales quota I'm trying to meet with my business. You know, if I make a few calls and they don't work out and I decide I'm going to give up, you know, that's really the only time I failed. You know, if I keep trying and I keep trying, you know, there's a ton of people out there, right? There's a ton of different prospects out there that I can reach out to and, you know, discuss my objectives with. So I think it would really have to be, it comes back to that commitment. You know, if you're committed to your goal, if you're committed to the lifestyle that you want to create for yourself, failure is just another part of the process. It's just another stepping stone. So it really comes back down to a matter of how we're looking at it. You know, the meaning we're assigning to the so-called failure.
I'm also very interested in not failure so much as in fairness, because a lot of people have an idea of what's fair and what's not fair. And for example, they may try very hard to get a deal and be very close to getting it for their business. And then for some reason, you know, some reason that doesn't really make sense, they don't get it. And they suddenly feel that things are unfair, you know, and somehow something was taken from them that should be theirs. So that idea of fairness, I found that to be a roadblock to really assuming responsibility for everything and taking ownership of things. Because if you always blame other people, and if you think that life is unfair to you, you're basically blocked from taking responsibility and from seeing what role you play in the situation. What I'm really trying to get at is, how can somebody go about to let go of that idea of fairness that's holding them back in this case?
Ah, I see. Fairness. Yes, I'd have to agree with you on that. Fairness can really stop a person in their tracks. Their idea of what's fair and what's not can really stop a person in their tracks. I would have to say that fairness, a person's worldviews of what's fair and what's not, is really just coming down to their perspective on things. And their perspective on things may be influenced by some sort of past trauma, because really that's what we're getting at, right? This is a victim mentality. I'm a victim to circumstances. I'm a victim to my environment. I'm a victim to so-and-so. And when I say trauma, I don't want people to misunderstand me. Trauma isn't necessarily the things that a person experiences in their environment, right? When we say trauma, the average person might think of, you know, some sort of, you know, domestic abuse or sexual abuse or some sort of, you know, war experience or something like that. But trauma isn't really what happens to you. Trauma is what happens within you. So it could be something as simple as, let's say you're in grade school and you do your first few artworks and you show it to a couple people and they make fun of you for it, right? So if you are experiencing some sort of shame or some sort of dissatisfaction with how you performed, and there's nobody to really recognize those emotions with, and there's no one to really communicate those emotions with, somebody to acknowledge your inner experience, that kind of stuff can get stored within us and really influence the ways that we see the world, which is what you're talking about, how things should be. The idea of fairness is really just that. It's what I think a certain situation should come out to. And if it's not, that's automatically going to be me thinking that it's not fair. If it is, I'm going to think it is fair, right? So to let go of that, I think it takes a lot of inner work. You know, we're talking about, you know, years of conditioning that have taken place within an individual. And science is really coming out and telling us that these kind of experiences are not only stored in our memory, but also within our body. So these traumatic experiences need more than just a perspective. I mean, ultimately, it is going to be a big perspective change, but it's going to take more than just an idea. You know, I think that these kind of views, these kind of beliefs really need to be worked through in the body as well as the mind. So I would have to say that to let go of those experiences, we need to find within us an ability to really push past discomfort, push past resistance that we have within ourselves. So practices such as weightlifting or yoga or martial arts, I think those kind of practices really help a person, not only because of the physical experience that a person can go through, but more so in situations like yoga and martial arts. They also provide a community of support, you know, of other individuals that are on the same path as you that you can relate with. And having those experiences, having that network of support, I think can really help a person not only diagnose, but work through those problems. So yeah, I would have to say that it's just pushing into, well, not pushing. I don't think that's the right word. I would say leaning into discomfort, you know, leaning into what you think is not fair.
Mm-hmm.
And the more a person does that, I think they start to really entertain different worldviews and different ideas, and they become a little bit more flexible to who they think they are and who they think the world sees them as, and ultimately their place in the world.
Mm-hmm. Makes total sense. Right. So, I mean, you mentioned the stuff about the network of support and really the importance of that. And in all my work with people and in interacting with people, I've often had the experience of not really doing anything, but just listening to somebody. And at the end of the discussion, they pretty much say, oh, thank you for that. That was really helpful. And I wanted to ask you, what exactly do you think that is about? What sort of help did they receive by me listening to them?
That is a funny situation, right? When you're thinking, help, what do you mean thank you for help? I didn't really do anything other than sit here. Yeah, I think it really comes down to the person going back into their own mind and acknowledging certain things through that conversation, through that medium. And the fact that they're able to share it with somebody, I think it really gives them a sense of acceptance and a sense of acknowledgement for what they're going through. And just the non-judgmental approach of you sitting there and listening kind of allows them to work through their own situation. Because really, we kind of come to the conclusions on our own, right? Like we could tell a person all sorts of different things, but being that we're using a medium of language for our communication, you know, words can only go so far. You know, each person has their own interpretations for certain words, right? So for example, if I say gum, there may be a person out there thinking of chewing gum, and a dentist might be thinking of the gums of our teeth, right? This is just one example of how certain words can trigger different meanings for different individuals. So really, it's going to take a change within a person, and that change is really going to be up to them. You know, if they're ready to experience a shift, they're going to experience the shift. Whether you're telling them a bunch of different things or you're just listening, it isn't going to make a difference. I mean, obviously, if you're telling them a bunch of things and you're kind of criticizing them and you're making them feel greater shame and greater discomfort, that's going to add more roadblocks to their journey. But let's say you're trying to tell them exactly what they need to do. If within themselves, if they're not ready to kind of make that shift, I think it's going to be very difficult, if not impossible, for you to make that shift for them. So just by sitting back and listening, I think is a powerful thing to do for an individual.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that it's the fact that if they hear themselves listen to non-judgmentally, that sort of allows them to explore their issues also in a non-judgmental fashion that helps them?
Yeah, I would say so.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I always found those kind of situations very interesting, and that's exactly why I wanted to ask you. You've also mentioned about conditioning and how trauma can embed that conditioning very deep within somebody's being. And obviously that conditioning is formed, as you said, over many years. So the question I wanted to ask you is whether or not that conditioning can be dropped at once in a moment, or must it always be through a gradual process?
You know, Tudor, I think it typically does happen through a gradual process, but that's not to say that people aren't capable of tremendous immediate shifts. It could sort of be like how thunder strikes, right? Thunder comes from nowhere. It's sudden and it surprises people. So in just the same way, it's very possible that a person can receive an insight that completely shifts their perspective and causes a major transformation in their beliefs and in their worldviews, which consequently would cause a major transformation in their identity and in their behavior. So I don't want to discredit that fact and say it's always going to be a gradual process.
But I think for the most part, it is a commitment to slow and steady changes in habit. It's really coming down to our habits, right? Because our day-to-day behaviors, that's really what the trauma is influencing. So There's times where people just, you know, they get into a huge accident and they immediately decide they make a major life shift. But then there's other times where people are constantly experiencing dissatisfaction with their lives and they say, hey, this is enough. I'm going to do my best and do a little bit better each time. And they make changes that way. It's slow, steady changes. So it really depends on the individual and how fed up they are with where they are in life.
Mm-hmm. It makes total sense. So, I mean, would you say if they're more fed up and they're very dissatisfied with where they're at, then they have a lot more energy available to make that change faster?
I would agree with that, right? Because that dissatisfaction can kind of be transmuted into energy to create something new. It could be transmuted into, you know, instead of that mental battle that we have with ourselves or that the person has with themselves, they're expending a ton of energy arguing with themselves in their head, when really that energy can be put into creating change.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is fascinating because one of the things that I notice very often about people who struggle with mental health issues, and I mean, mental health issues are very common amongst entrepreneurs, actually. It's just that a lot of us don't speak about them. But for example, things like anxiety or depression are common amongst entrepreneurs and a lot more prevalent than amongst the common population, which is probably also due to the fact that entrepreneurs just get exposed to more and greater stressors than most other people. So with regards to depression, we mentioned earlier, and you were telling me how anger can be, or basically dissatisfaction. I mean, to me, it's a form of anger, right? You're upset at the current situation and you want it to be different. Somebody who is depressed, they lack that anger, right? They lack that dissatisfaction that gets them to make a change. So how can somebody who is in that position where they basically don't have a very strong desire and they're not very dissatisfied, how can they get themselves to the point where they're actually super dissatisfied and they say, I'm ready, I need to make a change?
Right. If only we can get a bunch of these people that are stuck in those situations to experience that anger, to get that change to come about. But Tudor, I would have to say that when it comes to that sort of dissatisfaction, there's some deeper levels than anger. And I think anger would be a preferred place than some of these other levels. These other levels that I'm talking about are like guilt or shame or, you know, an intense fear of, you know, moving forward, or fear of uncertainty, or the fear of unknown. I think if an individual can pull themselves into that phase of anger, that's where the energy, I think, really would kind of boil up within them to make those changes. But below those levels of anger, the experience of shame or guilt or fear, I think there's very little energy to play with at those levels. If I could just make a suggestion to anybody experiencing anything less than anger, I would say first, anger is a good level to go to. You know, if you can build yourself up to be angry at the life that you have right now, the life that you're experiencing right now, I think that's a good place to shoot for. But obviously to use that anger towards productive ends, you know, not to use that anger in any further disharm to yourself or to anybody else. To transmute that anger into something productive, such as creating a business or creating any sort of creative endeavor, whether it's a business, a book, a course, or even a conversation, something as basic as having a certain conversation with somebody, you know? I think I would have to say that the person needs to find within themselves that anger to be able to have that energy. And until they can come up to that, building that energy within themselves, I think there's a lot of inner work that needs to take place.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is very interesting. I mean, obviously the lower emotions, you mentioned some of them. I mean, probably the worst are guilt and shame. Those are quite restrictive. A lot of people who want to start a business, though, they're very skilled, right? They have a lot of skills. They have a lot of experience, but somehow they still can't get started. And it's exactly what you mentioned earlier, that fear of unknown. So how do we get somebody who is in a comfortable position in the sense that they're not broke, right? They have a decent job. They have a decent amount of money, but they obviously would like more. But at the same time, they're afraid of the unknown. What sort of steps would such a person need to take to develop that kind of energy that you're just talking about that would actually enable them to make the shift?
Right. That's a good one, Tudor, because I too know there's a ton of people out there with the skills and expertise to really make some really great things happen in this world that for some reason or another, they're just not. That's a tough one for someone experiencing that situation. But I would say that they would really need to examine what they want out of life and not only create goals for themselves, but create goals that align really with some sort of greater desire. Person needs to be driven by something that they believe is greater than themselves. So what I mean is, if they can take a step back and really look at what really pisses them off in life, what really just triggers them and what really makes them angry. And then if they make a list of that and they come back and make a list of all the things they absolutely adore in life, you know, the things that they love, the things that really light them on fire. If the person can find a way to bring these two things together into some sort of endeavor, I think that's where they will really find not only something that pulls them forward, but something that pushes them from behind as well.
Mm-hmm. That's very interesting.
Yeah, if I could just add one more thing, I would say it's kind of positioning those fears. You mentioned the fear of the unknown, right? So that's like a fear that's in front of a person. You know, I'm looking ahead and I'm seeing not exactly what is an ideal situation in my mind, right? I'm looking in front of me and I'm seeing all that. Well, what could happen if you take that fear and you actually put it behind you, right? So if you think, what is my life going to look like 10, 20, 25, 30 years down the line if I do not do the things that I want to do? You know, that way you kind of take that fear that's in front of you and you put it behind you and you magnify the fear that's behind you. And it's kind of constantly like a dog chasing you. It's constantly pushing you to go forward and to act and to do the things that you want to do, because you realize if you don't, 10, 20, 25, 30 years, you're going to be way worse than where you are now. And if you're dissatisfied now, you know, it's not going to look pretty down the line, right?
I mean, that can be a very powerful thing. I mean, as I'm sure you know, I mean, desperate people will resort often to desperate measures, right? And I mean, it's fear that gets people desperate. And a lot of people have become great achievers due to harnessing their fears, so to speak. At the same time, I think that even if you're successful like that, but you're always driven by fear, there's something sort of lacking there, right? I mean, there's some dissatisfaction which is going to always follow you like a shadow, or like you said, like a dog. Do you think I'm wrong about that?
I think it can be. It can be. And that's going to come back to kind of aligning with that, so to speak, higher purpose that you have for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So not only, let's go back and play with that example. Not only am I going to be chased by this dog that's behind me, but I have to have something in front of me that I'm actually looking forward to. You know, mm-hmm. for some people, that's a family and children and, you know, a nice living environment, whether it's a house, a nice fence in the front with a, you know, a bunch of puppies running around. For some people, that's the ideal. For other people that have more values based on complete freedom, maybe for them, it's a lifestyle of travel and being in different continents and exploring different sites. And, you know, so really it has to be both. We can't just have something pushing us from behind, but we have to have something that we're looking forward to as well, whether that's an ideal lifestyle for us, whether that's something that we want to deliver to the world, whatever it is, there has to be both a push and a pull.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. And I mean, I can sort of understand how both of them are actually working together. And you need both to actually have a meaningful and fulfilling life. I'm just wondering, what sort of advice would you give to people who simply don't know what they want? You know, they're just unsure about what they actually want. What sort of practices or activities would you recommend to them to just get a clearer sense of that?
I would have to say that if a person doesn't think they know what they want, I think there's really just a bunch of mental resistance in the way. I think within every person, there is this little voice that speaks to them. It kind of tells them what they should be doing with their lives and the conversations mm-hmm. that they should be having with the people that are important to them and the changes that they need to make. But often I think what happens is on a conscious level, we kind of, and this kind of comes back to the whole trauma conversation, we kind of drown out that voice, right? So we mm-hmm. drown out that the guidance that's really within us, that inner compass that is pointing us to the direction that we should go. So if somebody is in a situation like that, the best thing I can advise is just to experiment, right? So anything that comes to mind, if you think that you want to try out this acrobatics class, go try it out for a week or two. You know, mm-hmm. what's the worst that can happen? You had a new experience. You know, you learned something about yourself. You learned something about, in this instance, acrobatics, right? So really, I would just say, I would try to encourage the person to try different things.
These are fantastic insights. I mean, a lot of the conversation that we've had, and obviously, I think that this goes to one of your beliefs, probably, about the importance really of mindset when it comes to entrepreneurship and success in business. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. Mindset. You know, I actually wrote an entire book on this recently that's going to be published in just about a month, coming June 1st. It's called Wired for Success, Practical Philosophies to Master Entrepreneurship and Live Life on Your Terms. And it's all about mm-hmm. mindset for the entrepreneur. You know, as we're coming up, as we're growing into our teenage years, into adulthood, there's a lot of conditioning that takes place that kind of makes things a little bit more difficult for especially entrepreneurs, obviously for everybody. Cultural conditioning isn't exclusive to business owners, but to everybody. But being that entrepreneurs are kind of people that go out there and carve out their own path in life, this kind of conditioning, I believe, affects them a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what the book kind of challenges. It challenges the modern day ideas that we have around success, around our ideas of ourselves and the way we should ultimately, the way we live our life. So I think mindset is incredibly important, and it all comes back down to that third principle, which you asked me about earlier in the beginning of the conversation, which is, you know, examining yourself, examining your lifestyle, your ideas of who you are, the roles you play in society, and really to figure all of that stuff out and to see how it would align with your goals, with the life that you want to create. So that's what I would say in terms of mindset for entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing that. And I mean, thank you for sharing about your book. We're going to put a link down in the show notes. I mean, as soon as it's published, we're going to add that link. Will there be any way for people to pre-order the book? I just wanted to ask you.
As far as pre-orders go, we're holding off on pre-orders and we're just going to allow people to purchase immediately upon release. And yeah, I would definitely appreciate that link for the viewers here today.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So, I mean, can you tell us a bit more about what actually drove you to write the book in the first place? And number two, who can most benefit from the book and who should basically be getting it?
Yeah, sure. It all comes back to that night in bed after the surgery. I was really contemplating where my life was headed and what I wanted to create for myself, because I was thinking back and I was like, hey, you know, I built this business. I changed the lifestyle that I wanted. I made enough money to leave the job and to kind of have that sense of freedom, but I was still dissatisfied. So what was I going to do? And it's funny how our conversation got to this point, because we kind of covered all of those things that led me to write the book. You know, I thought about all the things that I really didn't like in society today, which was the prevalent conditioning that we're all fed, you know, we're all programmed into. And I thought about what I wanted to deliver to people and the changes that I would like to see in society. And that's kind of what led me to write the book. I should also mention, you know, a lot of people that write books like these, you know, it's kind of common today in the online culture. You know, they kind of position themselves as these gurus or people that have all the answers. I want to, right at the start, I want to say that that's definitely not me. I don't have all the answers. All I have is the experiences that I have and, you know, the things I've studied. And, you know, that's, I make the best use of that. You know, I've realized that I can't really lie to myself. And, you know, that's what I use to kind of impart these ideas in the book and to the people I speak with and so on. So, you know, if the book helps somebody in some way, I'm eternally happy for that. But I don't think that it's going to essentially be a problem solver. I think that, you know, it can give a person certain pieces to the puzzle of the problem that they're experiencing. But I don't think it's going to be the end all be all. You know, the person after reading needs to still take action. They need to lean into that discomfort that we were talking about. They need to really examine themselves and their lives and their situation. So I think, yeah, I would have to say that was really the reason I wrote the book, is really to just give people some food for thought and maybe, if possible, fuel for change. And to answer your second question of who could most benefit from the book, obviously being an author, I want this book in front of as many people as I can. So I would say anybody, but really, if we're going to drill down into it, I think, you know, all the people, the questions that you asked me about those certain people, you know, the people that seem to find themselves stuck in certain situations, you know, entrepreneurs that are experiencing some sort of roadblocks or they're not finding some certain clarity that they're looking for. I think those people could benefit the most from this book.
That makes sense. I mean, thank you for sharing that. One other question that I had. So obviously you've created this resource, really the book, to share your experience and the lessons that you've learned about mindset and all the topics that we've discussed with people. So if they want to get more in depth in those subjects that we've covered in the podcast, they should probably buy the book. I wanted to ask you personally now if there are also any resources out there that helped you in your own life and in your own journey? If so, if you could share some of them.
Yeah, absolutely. There's definitely some practices that I've implemented into my own life, both now and in the past, that have helped me tremendously. And a few of those resources, I would have to say, is number one, journaling, I think, is incredibly impactful. Number two, breath work, I think, has been a significant game changer in my day-to-day life. And number three, I would have to say meditation, and I'll add a fourth which is exercise. All these things, these methods, these resources that I'm talking about are really about just getting a day-to-day handle on a handle on day-to-day life, right? You know, we talked about how trauma and how certain perspectives could really influence a person to kind of experience those feelings of being stuck. And I think all of these practices that I just mentioned could really help a person with all of that.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, I mean, this sort of goes back to the idea that we discussed earlier when you mentioned that trauma is not just in the mind, but also in the body. That's one of the ideas that we didn't really get a lot of time to explore. So I wanted to take a moment to ask you about it now. If you can detail a bit more about how that works and how those practices that involve the body can help a person actually release that trauma.
Sure. I think it's important that I mention on this topic of trauma that I'm not a professional. And if anybody is experiencing some severe depression or anxiety, that I would highly advise that they do speak to a professional out there. But just for educational and conversational purposes, I would have to say that society today kind of looks at this situation and tries to rectify it with just therapy. I think that's the first thing that people should start with. But I think the idea going around is that's the only thing that people should be doing. And I think that it kind of goes deeper than that. And I don't think that therapy needs to be the only alternative. I think meditation and journaling are great substitutes to that as well. But again, there's different degrees to this. You know, if somebody is experiencing some severe emotions, I think they should definitely speak to a professional. However, if their lives are, like you mentioned earlier, their lives are comfortable and they're okay, but they're just looking for something more, I think practices like meditation and journaling could really serve as that bridge that a therapist could serve as. Now, in terms of dealing with these experiences in our body, dealing with these emotions that could be trapped in our body, I think breath work is the first thing I would recommend to somebody that is experiencing that. Breathwork really allows a person to kind of take control of their being, their internal energy systems, and it really allows them to kind of feel in control of that while at the same time letting go. So it's kind of paradoxical in that sense. But I mean, if we just talk about the breath for a second, breathing is one of the only things that in our bodily system that we can both control consciously. And if we let it go, it could kind of run on autopilot as well. So really examining that system within us, I think is important. And I think it can help a lot. Going into the energy that's stored in the body. So what I would say is that if there's a bunch of these trapped emotions in the body, what can happen is that a person could be kind of going through life in a survival mode, right? Like, for example, when let's say a person is out in the jungle, right? And they come across a big tiger, for example, or a lion or something. There's going to be certain experiences that this person's going to have within themselves that's going to throw them into a fight or flight response. And it's going to be very beneficial in those types of environments, right? The person needs to run away to save their life. However, what happens in modern society today when a person has those kind of trapped emotions and they're going through life in survival mode, they're not performing at their optimal level because there are certain things in their day-to-day life that are triggering those same types of fight or flight responses. So for example, maybe they're, you know, let's say a person's at a job that they're very dissatisfied with and their manager comes in and asks them about the deadline that they're supposed to meet. You know, internally, that could trigger a fight or flight response within that individual. And what happens is that the muscles tense up and, you know, the blood flows all the way to the legs and it's preparing the body to either fight or take flight. And those types of emotions, I think, need to be kind of dealt with. And breath work, I think, really helps with that. There's really a popular individual online called Wim Hof, who has a breathing method that he's been kind of spreading through social media and through different podcasts and different mediums. And I think that's a very powerful method to explore to kind of deal with these trapped emotions within ourselves. The next one I would say is probably either yoga or some sort of martial art. Both of those practices, both of those disciplines, I think are incredibly powerful to integrate the mind and the body to be able to really deal with those trapped emotions.
Makes total sense. I mean, I have two more questions for you. So I'll start with the first one. So first of all, how does somebody know if he has a trapped emotion inside the body and he can benefit from things such as breath work or yoga? How does someone basically identify that?
So I think it's a matter of identifying the ways that we're feeling stuck in life more so than identifying those trapped emotions. The trapped emotions kind of work themselves out. It's really coming down to identifying the ways that we're holding ourselves back, right? So if a person is experiencing some sort of roadblock, or maybe they're experiencing some severe procrastination or severe fear of uncertainty or something, these are all signals that can point back to a person with unresolved traumatic experiences. So I would have to say to just really examine those worldviews that you hold for that person. You know, if you feel that, going back to the fairness thing, if you feel that some situation is not fair, really dive into it. What about it is not fair? What about the person that is making it unfair? Is there another person that is causing it to be unfair? And, you know, what are the characteristics of that unfairness? And really to think about what it is about that situation, right? You know, and how much of that situation is actually true and how much of it is just made up in our head, to really just examine those stories. Because the emotions within ourselves, they need to be experienced. You know, we can't really run from that shame. We can't really run from that anger as much as we would like to. We need to find a medium to explore those emotions and really feel them to be able to let go of them.
That makes sense. All right, then. So, I mean, thank you for everything that you've shared with us, Edmund. I wanted to give you one last chance now to basically, if you wanted to leave any other comments, suggestions, or really share any other message with our listeners, please go ahead.
Yeah, Tudor, it's been a pleasure. I really enjoyed this conversation. I would just tell people to really go out there and lean into that fear that they're experiencing. It's really liberating what can come out from confronting those situations. And aside from that, I would just, you know, mention, if you're more curious about these topics, to check out the link below, check out the book. And yeah, I would leave them there.
Thank you very much then, Edmund. To our listeners, the book is once again Wired for Success. We're going to have a link for it. The release date is June 1st. You're also going to be able to find it via Amazon, if I'm correct, right, Ed?
Yes.
That's awesome. All right. So thank you then for coming on. It's been my pleasure. I greatly enjoyed our discussion here. So thank you once again. And for our listeners, stay tuned for the next episode. And until next time, remember to keep growing your business and providing massive value to the world. You are the reason why we're all growing richer, our freedoms are expanding, and we're all living in greater prosperity. Thank you.